Yes, guys, welcome back to another episode of Teams Like Brighton. And ladies and gentlemen, it has happened. We are going on a European tour. Be elated, ladies and gentlemen. Brighton and Hove Albion 3, Southampton 1, top 7 confirmed, and more or less top 6 has been secured as well. Richie, you were there. I was there. What an occasion.
Yes, I mean, it was the end result was obviously the all-important thing. Brighton didn't make it that easy for themselves at times. They weren't at their best, and even woeful Southampton made it some nervy times in part of the second half. But yes, the main thing is they got over the fine line. We talked about how we need, you know, hopefully it could all be wrapped up this weekend, and it happened. I think I was pretty spot on with my predictions, actually. I think I correctly predicted a 3-1 win. I think I did say Brentford might cause an upset. It's not even an upset because Tottenham are very good and Brentford are good. Everything fell into place beautifully. It was actually a bit of a nervy atmosphere at times, I thought. There was a bit of restlessness, especially before Ferguson's goal. I think Nciso was getting a little bit of shtick from the crowd. He was losing the ball a couple of times. Brighton weren't quite as precise. Southampton had a couple of decent chances on the breakaway, especially from, I think it's Alcaraz, who was basically put through on goal by Walcott, who was probably Southampton's best player, but that's not saying that much. And he sliced wide. And then what I loved about everyone with Brighton, obviously, they play fantastic football. Sometimes they might overplay. And what I loved about the Brighton's opener was just Ferguson was like, give it me, wham. Just crash, bang, wallop. No mess about, smashed it. And I think he is a true centre forward, and Brighton have been looking for one of those for a long, long time. I just saw that Harry Redknapp likened him, and he did actually say, maybe a bit of a contradiction, I don't want to get too carried away, but he does remind me of Alan Shearer. The main thing was the result. It wasn't pretty at times, but then also your leaders stepped up when they needed to. Pascal Gross, your favourite Tom, delivered when Brighton needed it after it looked like it was 2-2 it was a El Yunusi header, and then looked like Walcott made it 2-2. That was ruled out for offside, very, very close one, and then Gross settled the nerves to secure the win in a 3-1 win. So yeah, the main thing is a momentous day. As we've talked about it, 26 years ago Brighton were one game away from falling into oblivion out of the Football League, and now they're in Europe. It's just nuts.
I know. Well, exactly that. It's absolutely bonkers, the journey that we have gone through in those 26 years. I'll tell you, it was quite succinct about it all. Obviously, one of my dad was someone who was very much involved at the Albion in the 90s, and a lot of his mates were there. And after the match, we went to the pub and like they all just met up, and it was just kind of like, it was weird seeing grown men cry and just have a tear and just reminisce about all the stuff they got up to in the 90s to, you know, stick it to one to Bill Archer and Bellotti and Stanley, you know, what they did in the campaigns, what they did at the matches, and, you know, the good, the bad, and the damn right ugly of it all. And then they're just there having a drink, watching the City-Chelsea match, just thinking, we're one of the best teams in England now. We were one of the worst teams in the Football League not that long ago. And we also had a athletics track ground that was voted consistently the worst for away fan experience and the worst that opposition teams hate to go to. And now we are where we are for so many reasons that we've said in the past. You know, the likes of Paul Samra, Dick Knight, Tony Bloom, Robbie Reynolds, Stuart Storer. I could reminisce about it all. But I'm very slightly digressing on this because, like you're saying, Julio Enciso did get he definitely was getting frustrated, and I think the fans were getting a bit tetchy with it all. He was definitely a bit overselling on some of the fouls, shall we say. And it was quite amusing seeing a couple of the players having to go up to him and just kind of like almost be like, yeah, calm down. You've got the fouls. Stop worrying about anything else. Okay. Let's get going with the match. It was very interesting to see about Pascal Gross as well, how much of a leader he's actually been in the midfield and how the other players too. And the fact that he's just pushed them and just been like, right, focus, next bit. Ferguson's first goal was ridiculous. Like, just came out of nothing.
Yeah.
Got the ball from Gross, taps it forward, and he just whacks it full pelt through the legs of the defender, right in that perfect position, just underneath the goalkeeper to the side. Not enough for him to just parry it away, and he kind of it's just gone right under him, so he can't really even dive down quick enough to get it. And goalkeepers are always taught, don't use your hands, not your feet. So it's quite amusing the fact that's happened as well. And then after that, game on, supposedly anyway. We got the second goal at least from Ferguson again. What a baller. What a baller.
That pass from Matoma, by the way, outside the foot. Yes. Sumptuous. That was delicious.
God. And how unlucky is he not to get on the score sheet either? Unbelievably unlucky. That dink over the keeper, and then he hits the post. It was harder to miss the poor guy. And you can see he was getting frustrated. But yeah, I mean, he was quality in that game anyway. And then a little bit of a sticky situation in the second half. We're not really used to that. We used to seeing us scoring the goals or getting the 1-0 at half time and then pushing on from that. No, James Ward-Prowse scores from a corner kick, which just gets things going their way. Then Walcott scores an absolutely delicious dink over Jason Steele, who had absolutely no chance in that situation. Walcott times his run perfectly, positioned himself well. And then VAR, I can't believe I'm saying this, came to our rescue. I'm to this day, don't think a single soul thought that was offside. I don't think that's offside, even looking at the pictures. But VAR says it's offside, so let it be so. And then Gross is to finish it off, just to round it off, because Southampton were going for it. They had their opportunities. They definitely were keen. But I suppose that kind of worked in our favour. They've got nothing to lose, so they're happy to attack, and make themselves vulnerable at the back or for the counter. And that kind of played in our hands a few times. And Ferguson's goals were one of them. Well, two examples right there. And then you've got Pascal Gross, who's just thought, yeah, I'm going to take some inspiration for Ferguson, get myself in position, just hit and hope. And it works, an absolute treat. Left foot as well. What a boy. But buzzing. And we could talk about the game, but really at the end of it, for me, it was final whistle. And you can see on the touchline, Zerbi's just hugging his coaching staff and they're all jumping up and down. You can see Dunk just going absolutely mental as well, just fist pumping, tensing up his whole body, just wanting to shout out to the top of his lungs, get in there. It was magical. It was so, so good to be a part of that. And now it's just a case of finding some summer side gigs, some freelancing gigs to just add into that European pot fund. 1st of September, ladies and gentlemen. 1st of September is the Europa League group draw, which is what we'll be in. So that's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to that. 21st September is the first ever European match for Brighton and Hove Albion as well. Oh, cannot wait, Richie. Cannot wait.
Yes, it was obviously it was a big feeling of relief, sort of extolling all that emotion at the end. But yeah, there was so many great like sort of one-liners from the players and the manager. I'm just going to go for a couple here. Your man Gross said, "It's the best day in my football life." Jason Steele said, "Incredible. I'm still lost for words. I hope everyone's passports are in date."
Love that.
Deserby said, "We need another point to get into the Europa League because we want to play in the Europa League, not the Conference League." He said, "I spoke with Tony Bloom. He is very, very happy." He also said, "I can say it's the best day in my career." And it was interesting. There was, it was kind of like a surreal moment. I mean, you know, I haven't grown up supporting Brighton. Obviously, you have, Tom, but just, you know, if you take a step back and then you go and the journalist goes, you know, what's it going to be like? You know, you've been in the draw and there's going to be teams like, you know, AC Milan, like one of the most successful teams in footballing history in Europe. It's just nuts. And then so he's reading off these, you know, big name teams, Bayer Leverkusen and all that jazz, and you just go, and De Zerbi's like kind of nodding, smiling, just loving it all. He says, "I'm looking forward to playing with these teams. It will be an honor. If we play in this competition, we play to win, but we can't lose our style or DNA." So yeah, love it. And then one thing just to end, and I can I'll throw it back to you, Tom, just to get your thoughts. So De Zerbi's obviously been, whenever anyone from Brighton does well, and that happens a lot, they get linked with a move somewhere else and it's all very tiring and yeah, yada, yada, yada. But it looks like De Zerbi has definitely put any speculation or rumours to bed, because he told BBC Radio 5 Live, "It is an honour to be the coach of Brighton and work with these players. I want to stay a long time. The truth is, I don't want to lose this group because I'm enjoying working with them. They are a group with a big level. I don't want to lose this. I'm lucky to work with them and be here at this moment." So hopefully, I mean, you'll still get the transfer peddlers still going, "Oh, he wants to go back, blah, blah, blah." No, he has said it in his own words. He wants to be part of this Brighton project. I think, Tom, you told me that, you know, about 10 years or so ago, Gus Poyet talked about hitting the roof, having that glass ceiling. De Zerbi doesn't have that view. He's just like, keep on going. He just really quickly, he said after the Crystal Palace draw, when Brighton were robbed of that win at Selhurst Park back in February, he said after that result, he felt that Brighton could qualify for the Champions League. That was the goal. So after that, those setbacks and those disappointments, he was like, no, we can keep going. So that was the lofty ambitions of this club. And that's where he believes he can, I think he believes he can take Brighton.
Absolutely. And he's got every right to think that. And I love that about him. I love the fact that he's got this strong belief. And I love the fact that he's just confirmed and like put any doubt in the summer, telling these players, I'm staying. Let me reassure you, I'm here for the journey next season. Like, the only way he's ever going to get leave this club is, I don't know, to be honest. I honestly don't know. The guy, he loves this club. He loves part of it. We love him. He loves us. It's a match made in heaven, really. It's incredible how much of a affiliation he has with the fan base and vice versa. We haven't really had that with a head coach or manager for probably since Gus, really. Since the Poyet years, I don't really think we had that affiliation. Don't get me wrong. We've had managers before, after that, like Chris Hughton, for instance, who was, you know, he will always be a big part of what he's done for the Albion by getting us into the Premier League. But when someone like De Zerbi is that kind of manager that really, really understands the fans and the fans' thoughts and what he needs out of them and how to make it work, which makes it all the better, the fact that we're going into Europe with Roberto De Zerbi as our head coach. And I think that's probably the best bit of news we can get out of this now, by some miraculous turn of events, Moises Caicedo and Alexis McAllister sign new 5-year contracts. I think that's the only way that I think now put the cherry on top of the sundae right there. If we could keep those two, we won't, sadly. I don't think we will, despite our best efforts. Maybe keep Ali Mack. I don't know. If Liverpool.
He's on my mind. Like,
it looks like Liverpool getting Europa League. So I would be surprised if they can get Caicedo and McAllister. Because, well, they haven't got Champions League football. We're equals with Liverpool, really. And I can't believe I've actually just said that. And that's going to be mean. That's going to be clipped up by some Liverpool fan who's going to be out for me now. But we are. If they finish it fifth...
I don't know if that many Liverpool fans are watching our little podcast. Even though we are on the up, I don't know.
Trust me, the internet's got a funny way of coming back and biting you in the backside. Look... If they finish,
yeah,
fifth,
just put it in the headline as the title of the video.
that's what I'm gonna do. Equals with Liverpool, just to really trigger them. Look, I don't think Liverpool are gonna have that much of a transfer weigh-in. I don't think. Maybe I'm just being delusional, just because we're in Europe. Yeah, Liverpool, biggest club and all that, but hopefully we could get some pull in to say to McAllister, to say Caicedo. One more year. Stay one more year. Be part of this. You've got us here. You might as well reap what you've earned. Enjoy the rewards of your hard-earned work, because you're not getting Champions League football if it's Liverpool that you're going to. You might as well just wait another year, prove yourself in Europe, and then you go to Champions League and take it from there. But then again, football is a very short career. You want to make the most of it. So... We'll see what happens. It's going to be an interesting summer. And De Zerbi said that, you know, they've already made moves in the transfer window. And I think that's a hint for more signings to come. I hope one of them is James Ward-Prowse, because I thought his audition at the Amex was a very good one. I think he'd be superb asset to the squad. Set-piece magician, decent all-round baller in centre midfield. Might take some... doing to get into the whole De Zerbi ball thing, but I think he's an absolute baller. Him, James Milner, João Pedro, great start to the summer, and I can't wait to see who we bring in.
Ahmed, is it Damoud as well? Yes. The Dortmund guides coming, I think it seems.
I've got to say, I love how De Zerbi was very, like, not so secret about it, saying he's not our player yet. Like, brilliant. Okay, thanks for letting us know of that, Roberto, mate. I could just hear, like, the scouts and Paul Barber just absolutely seething, just going, no, we don't announce our signings. That's not us,
Roberto. That's another thing I like about him. It's just, you know, he's very candid and forthright on stuff. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't... there's so often... you know, you get managers who just talk in, you know, cliches and platitudes, and they just say, you know, they just talk without really saying anything. Whereas De Zerbi, I think I'm quoting Simon John, he says what he means and he means what he says, you know. but just on that transfer point, just to go into a little bit more detail. So he was asked about sort of planning for European football, and he told Brian Owen at the Argus, I have clear ideas. I think we are already moving the transfer market. We closed the deal for João Pedro and we're closing on other players. But I think we need something. You can't forget in January we lost a big player like Leandro Trossard. And we played with Evan Ferguson, but he's 18. You know, Julian Ciso, 18, 19, over the course of the season. To compete in four competition, we can't work with 14 players. But Tony knows very well my opinion. So that's, you know... What I love is yes, they've achieved this goal, but he's not going to let up. I can imagine he's probably not going to get much of a rest during the summer. He'll be probably wanting to have more of a say on transfers and you know, increasing the depth of this squad from being, you know, maybe 14, 15 to, you know, 18 type thing. So because that you know, as Crofty said, you know, Thursday night, you know, it's going to be that, you know, it's going to be regular. You know, this has been a very, very good example of what Brighton will need. I don't think if Brighton want to have success, they can't go from high, low, high, low, you know, like they have in the last couple of weeks with, you know, losses at Everton, Newcastle, Forest, for example. They need to, you have to be at it all the time. Obviously, West Ham show that they, it's not easy to do this season. They struggled and they spent quite a lot of money. So it's good to see that they are planning already. And it's, yeah, it should be fascinating to see who comes in.
Absolutely. Throwing it forward now as well. We've got two games left as well. We've got, and one of them is a big one on paper, the one that I got most nervous about, which is Villa away. But then we've got the other issue of welcoming Manchester City to the Amex as well. You know, there could have been a point where we would be, I would be sweating buckets right now on a Monday morning. Fortunately, I'm not. Fortunately, I'm just very, very tired from partying on the Sunday night. Man City coming into the Amex, they've got the title. We've got Europe. And I know Roberto wants that one more point just to really cast a doubt, purely because Villa could technically get it if there's a 7 or
16.
8.
Is it 16 goals difference, I think?
Yeah, Bryson something had like that. So yeah. So there needs to be a big, big swing against City and then
get thumped by Villa, yeah.
Villa needs to make up the difference from there on. But I'm sure Guardiola's thinking, nah, I'm giving the fringe players a go, give the big players a rest because they've got an FA Cup to worry about and then they've got the Champions League to worry about.
Exactly.
So, yeah, Wednesday night's going to be an exhibition match, I think, which would be brilliant. Just there, we're just there. They're singing Champions of England. We know what we are. And we're singing, we're on the European tour. Happy days.
There's going to be a lot of classics. You'll never sing that.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll just be humming the Beatles' Yellow Submarine for one reason or the other throughout the week now and throughout the whole summer. Then we go to Villa, and there's every chance that Villa could go on ahead and beat us. Make sure that Spurs don't get a whiff of European football, and we could all just be joining in on we're all going on the European tour at Villa Park. Which would just be bonkers. And I can't wait. I'm loving it. I'm so relieved that we're going to Villa Park with basically nothing to play for now. Absolutely nothing to play for. So, can't wait. Cannot wait, Richie. It's going to be a good one.
Or even weirder, if Tottenham lose on the final day, if Brighton beat Villa and Brentford win, Brentford could overhaul them both. That would be nuts.
Now, that's mental. I can't believe Brentford are still in the mix.
They and without Tony, they didn't need him. So no need to, you know, talk about conspiracy or anything like that. They're a good team without him. One thing I just want to maybe finish on. So apologies if this is a bit too indulgent, but I wrote an article yesterday about Brighton's sort of journey from, you know, basically, yeah, as I said, nearly going out of the Football League 26 years ago to now being in Europe. And I was speaking to a couple of some longer term employees at the club just to get some information on, you know, some interesting events at the With Dean or whatever. So I'm not going to read the whole article because that's way too indulgent, but just in terms of just like things that sort of, I think is interesting to point out. So you've got obviously, so I did it in the style of it's from Trainspotting 2 when Ewan McGregor talks about choose life. So it's basically just starting that every single line, but just starting off as, and this is, we can talk about it if we go through, but choose life, choose marching through Brighton, London, Lancashire to save your club, choose petitioning the Football Association, boycotting matches, walkouts, pitch invasions, fans united, and saying a bleary eyed goodbye to the Goldstone. Choose being minutes away from oblivion only for Robbie Ryan to save the day to preserve your Football League status 14 years after being in the English top flight and going for FA Cup glory. Choose a Dick Knight in shiny armour, rescuing the Seagulls from the prophets of doom and the icy spectres of Bill Archer, Greg Stanley and David Blotti. Choose 2 years at the Priestfield Stadium in Gillingham and a 140-mile round trip for a home game. If you just like look at those sort of bits in isolation, it's just incredible. Like, I mean, you could, you know, Luton are on a similar trajectory, maybe just in terms of they were in the conference even not that long ago, and then they could be in the Premier League. But just these stories do not happen very often, and it's just fantastic to see as a neutral.
Absolutely. I love to hear it. And I love the fact that there's so many comments. You know, in our previous episode, we talked about the Newcastle match, and there's so many Geordies like singing about how much they want Brighton into Europa League. It'd be fantastic to see them go through. So many other fans just saying, yeah, Brighton's become like a second team for me. The story's great. The football's great. You know, you guys must be buzzing. And we absolutely are, purely because, you know.
Is that the Europa League calling?
Yep. Or is the chartered flights ready and waiting to go from Shoreham Airport? Where we're at now, we're at our peak. But weirdly, we could climb higher than that. We're talking about European tours now. We're talking about big signings. We've got a World Cup winner in our squad. You know, it's a far cry from where we used to be. And like I said, all these neutrals are coming out to us because, you know, you guys are great. We can't fault it. Yeah, we are great. I'll go as far as saying we're bloody brilliant. Because we deserve to be where we are. We've got a fantastic owner in place who set down the foundations. We've got a very, very good CEO. We've got excellent facilities in our place. And, you know, we've got a brilliant manager whose vision has inspired this club, these players and the staff behind them to go that extra mile. You know, like I said, there was a time where we could be, if you've looked back on our defeats and the points that we've dropped, you know, if we'd done that little bit more, we could be talking about pushing on for Champions League football. Which is bonkers to think. No, it didn't happen, which is, you know, very, very sad, shame. But we've still got Europe, and everyone in Brighton is buzzing. Everyone in Sussex is over the moon, and people are going to be thinking about how to, like, booking holidays off and getting their trips all sorted and how much money they need to get and how to renew passport applications and getting their holiday insurance intact. Everything's coming up their way, and it's going to be an incredible season next season when, you know, Gatwick Airport, Stansted, Luton, they're all going to be taken over by Brighton fans on a Wednesday to Friday. And I cannot wait to be a part of that. I cannot wait to speak to other Brighton fans and reminisce about all, like, the 15 years and hear about what happened at the Goldstone and be able to hear it from different views from different people and just have that like humbling moment, just be like, we've done this. The only reason we are here today is because of the fans. We are only here because Paul Samra looked at the Articles of Association and realised what on earth is going on. That was definitely Europa League calling me that time. Look, we're in this fantastic position because of the fans, because of Attila the Stockbroker, because of Paul Samra, because of Liam Brady sorting out consortium, because of Dick Knight saying that he'll fund it, because of them staring Bill Archer in the face saying you're not going anywhere, because of Fans United, because of every single team in Europe and beyond who flew over and came to a little old town in little old city in Brighton and Hove to come and watch us in the north stand of the Goldstone and with that stunning picture on Fans United. And we won that match. It was a cracking game, from what I'm told anyway. I was about four at the time, so I can't really remember that far back. But look, we're here because of the fans. We're here because of the generation of fans who said, no, we're not going to do a Phoenix Club. We're Brighton and Hove Albion. We're here to stay, and we're not letting you guys profit from this. And it's quite succinct considering what the Super League was all about. And it was just pure greed. And now we're in this. We're up with the big guns, and now we're here to say, this is why these competitions work, because we're allowed to have teams like us, teams like Brighton. Yep, I've said it. That actually have these fantastic stories to tell. And I tell you what, we're not here just because of sheer fluke. We're here because we deserve it. And we're going to be in that group stage and we're going to give it all our might. And like De Zerbi says, we're going to be in it to win it. And I cannot wait. Cannot wait.
Yep, and I think that's a lovely note to end on. Very well put, Tom. So we'll be back. We'll be, I guess, reviewing the Manchester City game, hopefully where Brighton smash Pep Guardiola's team into oblivion. But either way, yeah, it should be good. It's a fantastic time to be a Brighton fan, and an even better time to keep on liking and subscribing to teams like Brighton.